Electric power would be obtained from either fuel cells or nuclear reactors. Spare tunnel boring machines would also be stored in the tunnel system. The plan mentioned deep underground shops for the complete repair of tunnel boring machines. There were to be special tunnel boring machines for digging out from deep underground after a nuclear attack, so that reserve nuclear missiles stored thousands of feet underground could be fired in retaliation. In the event of war, the base would be sealed off and power for the underground system of tunnels, tunnel boring machine repair shops, crew quarters and missile nests would need to be internally generated. Boeing Aerospace Company published the results of a study in 1984 that set forth plans for power generation in a sealed, deep ICBM base. After examining several options, Boeing decided that iron chlorine fuel cells would be the most efficient way to generate electricity. In this power generation scheme, huge underground tanks store liquid chlorine that is combined with hydrogen to form hydrochloric acid, HCl. This chemical reaction generates electricity. The HCl is then pumped into huge tanks filled with small iron balls. The iron, Fe, and HCl react chemically to form ferrous chloride, FeCl2, and release hydrogen gas, which is then pumped back to the fuel cell to react again with the liquid chlorine, starting the whole cycle over. Iron chlorine fuel cells are the preferred mode of power generation if the post-attack confinement of the base lasts for less than 4 years. If the base were to be sealed for more than 4 years, however, financial cost-benefit analysis indicated that 75 underground bases and tunnels liquid metal-cooled nuclear reactors would be recommended over iron chlorine fuel cells. The report does not say, but based on other literature I have seen, the liquid metal used to cool the liquid metal cooled reactors 3 would probably be lithium. The USNCTT tunnel plan called for the system to be built in the late 1980s and early 1990s, with mobilization of manpower and resources beginning in the early 1980s. The probable tunnel boring machine, TBM, supplier for the project indicated that it could supply 2 machines between January and June 1985. 1 machine per month between July and December 1985, 2 machines per month between January and June 1986, and 3 to 4 machines per month thereafter. That supply schedule was predicated on using a 16 featuring tunnel diameter. If 18 featuring were selected as the diameter, the manufacturer was able to make available 8 to 10 second-hand TBMs that could be reconditioned for immediate service. The report includes artists' conceptions of how portions of a deeply based missile tunnel system might look. See illustrations 22-24. Where might this system be located, assuming it has already been built, or is now under construction? The planners assumed it would be built somewhere in the western third of the country. See illustration 27. 3 specific sites mentioned in the text of the report are: A. 40 Mile Canyon in Nevada, B. Grand Mesa, Colorado, and C. the Basalt Plain in the Columbia River Basin, near Fairchild Air Force Base in the state of Washington. There are other federal documents and press reports which explicitly discuss this deep underground tunnel system. In August 1980, the Air Force released a detailed, 2-volume study which was prepared by the School of 76, the mother of all underground tunnels, mines, in Golden, Colorado. The study is entitled Tunnel Boring Machine Technology for a Deeply Based Missile 5 System. It calls for a 480 kilometers long, about 300 miles, deep underground tunnel system that would connect missile nests 2,400 featuring or more underground. In the event of nuclear war, the plans call for military crews to operate mechanical tunnel boring machines that would bore up to the surface from bases half a mile or more underground, towing nuclear missiles behind them, which they would then fire at the enemy. See illustrations 25 and 26 for schematic diagrams of the egress tunnel boring machine designs and missile egress plans from deep underground. The tunnel boring machine companies mentioned in the report are the Robbins Company of Kent, Washington, and Java Inc. of Solon, Ohio, Morris & Knudsen of Boise, Idaho, a huge company with subsidiaries in many states, is mentioned as a construction consultant. There are many other documents and articles that detail these plans. In 1984, the New York Times ran a front-page story that described the planned underground missile base as something like a 400-mile network of subways that would be 2,500 to 3,500 feet below the surface. 6 probably in a desert in the western United States. In 1985-7 the Asian Defense Journal ran an almost identical story, a highly technical 1985 document from the Air Force Geophysics Laboratory discusses ground motion effects that a deep underground facility might experience were it to undergo nuclear attack. In particular, it refers to an underground missile base within generic Mountain Bionate, the ICBM base in construction planning study. Unfortunately, no specific location or layout for the missile base is mentioned. A 1985 report from the Army Corps of Engineers Omaha District explicitly refers to an ICBM deep basing 77 underground bases and tunnels 9 construction planning study. U.S. National Committee on Tunneling Technology and the U.S. National Committee for Arc Mechanics discussed an underground missile system ranging between 3,000 featuring and 8,000 featuring underground. That's right, as much as 8,000 featuring underground. This 1988 report mentions having the base operational as soon as possible, within a 5-year construction schedule. 5 years from 1988 is 1993. Is such a base now operational? Far below some unknown location in the United States. Based on my research, I am not certain. However, given the rather substantial paper trail, it is certainly within the realm of possibility that something like it has been secretly built. The 1988 report calls for a system with tunnels up to 20 miles long, branching off from access shafts. The report's conclusion states, "The consensus of the working groups involved in preparing this report is that the basic technical capabilities to create complex underground facilities at the pace and depth envisioned are available in 10 current practice, a series of federal contracts for development of the deep underground missile system were let in the mid-1980s by the Air Force's Ballistic Missile Office at Norton Air Force Base in California. The contracts that were let do not, in and of themselves, prove that the project has actually been carried out. At the least, though, they do demonstrate that this concept went well beyond a paper planning stage and began to develop real, hard technology. United Technologies, Hamilton Standard Division of Windsor Locks, Connecticut was given a contract in November 1985 for life support and chemical biological agent mitigation systems on the small Intercontinental 78. Another 1988 report by the mother of all underground tunnels, ballistic missile, ICBM, deep basing program. The projected completion date for the work was the 11th of February 1988. The federal contract number was F047044785C0111. This contract would probably have to do with supply of pure air and water for the crew S of an underground base. In December 1985, BDM of McLean, Virginia was awarded a contract to conduct an intercontinental ballistic missile, ICBM, deep basing communication study. The contract was to be completed by February 1988. The 12th federal contract number was F047044786C0045. In 1986, Bell Aerospace Textron was given a contract for an ICBM deep basing gas-propelled launcher feasibility demonstration. Plans called for completion of the contract by June 1988. The federal contract number was F047044786-13C0100. The wording of the contract announcement creates the image of a nuclear missile being ejected into flight from the mouth of a tunnel bored to the surface from deep underground. In 1987, Earth Technology of San Bernardino, California was awarded a multi-million-dollar increase to a previously awarded contract in order to carry out what the Department of Defense rather fuzzily referred to as geotechnical and siting deep basing fine screening phase I-14. And to, in ordinary language, this would seem to mean that the Ballistic Missile Office paid this company millions of dollars to do a two-phase geological and technical study to fine screen sites where a deep underground missile base would be located. The federal contract number was F047044785C0084. And finally, the Robbins Company of Kent, W. Ashington, the tunnel boring machine manufacturer mentioned in the Air Force Weapons Laboratory Colorado School of Mines 2 volume report mentioned above, was awarded a contract in 1985 for egress excavation 79 underground bases and tunnels 15 development and testing, presumably This refers to excavation for egress of nuclear missiles from deep underground, since the contract was led by the Ballistic Missile Office at Norton Air Force Base. The federal contract number was F04704-4785C0112. So is there really a secret military tunnel system? The short answer to this question is, I am not certain. But the documents, articles and contracts referred to above suggest it is entirely possible that the military, working through the Ballistic Missile Office at Norton Air Force Base, with the probable assistance of the Army Corps of Engineers and private companies such as Robbins, Earth Technology, and others, has secretly built an extensive, very deeply buried tunnel system and nuclear missile complex, somewhere in the United States, perhaps somewhere in the West. If it has been made, this system may be, in its totality, hundreds of miles long and thousands of feet underground. If it exists, it is certainly very well hidden. And if it exists, it may very well explain either partly or wholly the recurrent rumors in ufology about a secret tunnel system in the southwestern United States. But even if it has not been built, the extensive plans, studies, and various contracts referred to above would be sufficient to fuel rumors about the existence of such a tunnel system. From the standpoint of disinformation, there is another possibility, that the military has really built a tunnel system of the sort described here, but has tried to hide its existence under a tabloid-style cover story of alien tunneling activities. According to this hypothetical scenario, the military would count on the alien connection to be sufficiently ridiculous in the public eye that if word of the tunnels ever surfaced in the media, they could be discounted as the fevered imaginings of Daffy ufologists. AT Illustration 1. Even though hidden from public view behind layers of high security, entrances to underground bases nevertheless can be big enough to literally drive a truck into. Two means of approach are shown here. Source: U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Literature Survey of Underground Construction Methods for Application to Hardened Facilities. Illustration 2. Example of Army Corps of Engineers plan for an underground base, circa late 1950s. Notice the microwave towers for communication and planned proximity to a community, highway, railroad tracks and power lines. Note 2. That two entrances are preferred and that there is a vertical shaft to the surface as well, perhaps for air. Source: M.D. Kirkpatrick, In Protective Construction in a Nuclear Age, Proceedings of the Second Protective Construction Symposium, the 24th to the 26th of March 1959, Volume 1, ed. J.J. O'Sullivan, New York, The Macmillan Company, 1961. Illustration 3. There is an underground facility beneath this ridge in the Manzano foothills on the outskirts of Albuquerque, New Mexico. This underground installation, begun in the late 1940s, is on Kirtland Air Force Base. Photo by the author. Illustration 4. An underground chamber in the mysterious Los Alamos lab facility, circa 1940s. After repeated requests, the Department of Energy released a badly blurred photostatic copy of magazine article that included this photograph. See pages 27-30 for the whole story. Original publication unknown. Example of underground plant arrangement. Illustration 5. Even in the 1950s, military planning for sizable underground installations was in full swing. Note the decontamination room, the chemical filter units, the blast closure valves on the fresh air intake units, and the water reservoirs. From U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Design of Underground Installations in Rock, Protective Features and Utilities. Example of air intake shafts. Illustration 6. Two ways of protecting the fresh air intake from above ground, circa 1950s. From U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Design of Underground Installations in Rock, Protective Features and Utilities. Illustration 7. Machinery powered by internal combustion engines underground would use up valuable breathing air, so the military planners in the 1950s devised a way to supply air to the machines and exhaust the fumes. Source: U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Design of Underground Installations in Rock, Protective Features and Utilities. Illustration 8. In 1964, the Army Corps of Engineers picked 12 sites suitable for the construction of 600-foot diameter cavities 4,000 featuring underground, for the purpose of setting off nuclear bomb test explosions. Source: U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Feasibility of Constructing Large Underground Cavities, Vol 1 Illustration 9, one of the sites selected by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in 1964, suitable for constructing a large cavity, deep underground, for testing nuclear bombs. Note that the horizontal option for access takes the form of a tunnel miles long. Source, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Feasibility of Constructing Large Underground Cavities, Volume 1 Illustration 10. A 1964 plan from the Army Corps of Engineers to construct a large underground cavity 4,000 feet underneath Agus Peak, northwest of Trona, California. If built, this facility would today be within the boundaries of the China Lake Naval Weapons Center, which has long been rumored to be the site of massive underground installation. Source, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Feasibility of Constructing Large Underground Cavities, Volume 3, Illustration 11. A beautiful piece of drafting work from the Army Corps of Engineers, circa 1964, was this facility, proposed for construction within the boundaries of present-day China Lake Naval Weapons Center, northwest of Trona, California, ever built. Source, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Feasibility of Constructing Large Underground Cavities, Volume 3, Illustration 12. You'd think the Navy would stick to the water, but no. They have plans to dig underground, too. Here they're figuring out how to store and hide their weapons. Source, R. Hibbard, et al., Subsurface Deployment of Naval Facilities, 1972, Illustration 13. The Nevada Test Site, shown here in an official Department of Energy photo taken in 1980, at the time of a less than 20 kiloton nuclear bomb test that took place 1,280 feet beneath Rainier Mesa. The test, designed by the Los Alamos National Laboratory, was conducted for the U.S. Defense Nuclear Agency. There are three underground entrances visible. One is large enough to receive a train. The numerous park trucks are reminders of the large numbers of people who work underground. They are not likely, though, to discuss their work with you. The secrecy oaths that they sign are very intimidating. Department of Energy photo, Illustration 14. Miners at work in tunnels beneath Rainier Mesa at the Nevada test site. They are stabilizing the walls with rock bolts and epoxy so that when the nuclear explosions go off, the walls won't crumble. Department of Energy photo, Illustration 15. A partial map of N Tunnel. Just one of the many tunnel complexes at the Nevada test site. Most of the black boxes are instrument alcoves. This labyrinth of passageways and tunnels, and it's only a fragment of the whole, reveals how much time and energy has been spent underground by just part of just one government agency at just one site. Department of Energy photo, Illustration 16. A line of sight pipe under construction and a Rainier Mesa at the Nevada test site. These pipes, which can be up to 27 feet ring in diameter, serve as test chambers that house monitoring equipment. They are placed 900 to 2000 feet ring from the nuclear blast. Defense Nuclear Agency photo, Illustration 17. Construction of nuclear test monitoring chambers in a tunnel under Rainier Mesa, at the Nevada test site. Department of Energy photo, Illustration 18. The one problem, and it's a big one, that the nuclear industry has not yet solved is what to do with nuclear waste. This test, run from 1980 to 1983 at the Nevada test site, evaluated the effects of storing spent reactor fuel in a granite formation, 1,400 feet ring underground. The spent nuclear fuel elements are in steel-lined holes in the floor, capped by 5,000 pounds concrete plugs. Department of Energy photo, Illustration 19. Local maps for finding the Northrop and McDonnell Douglas facilities in the Antelope Valley of Southern California. The Northrop facility is rumored to have as many as 42 underground levels. These plants feature strange installations not unlike the photographs from the Lockheed plant in Hellendale, California. See Illustrations 20 and 21. This whole area is reported to be a great place to spot very unconventional aircraft. This illustration reprinted with permission from the November 1992 HUFN report, the newsletter of the Houston UFO Network, P.O. Box 942, Bel Air, TX 77402, 713-850-1352, Illustration 20, Lockheed's mysterious Hellendale, California facility. The underground entrance, shown in close-up and lower photo, is in foreground. Although the long paved surface would seem to be a landing strip, it is interrupted by two huge pylons, which serve to render this landing strip unusable for conventional fixed-wing aircraft. Photos collection of the author. Illustration 21. Long shot and close-up view of unknown object on a test pylon at Lockheed's Hellendale, California facility. The pylon can be lowered into an underground chamber until it disappears from view. The white area around its base are doors which open and close. Some reports say that this is a radar testing facility, and the antenna dish bounces radar waves off test objects. Photos collection of the author. Illustration 22. A 1982 report from the U.S. National Committee on Tunneling Technology contained this picture of what a deep underground base for strategic missiles would look like from the outside. Source: Design and Construction of Deep Underground Basing Facilities for Strategic Missiles, Vol. 2. Briefings on Systems Concepts and Requirements, Fed. Dot Number, NRC sets TT-82-2. Illustration 23. Cutaway view of a deep underground base. Note the pre-dug exits for possible missile launches. Source: Design and Construction of Deep Underground Basing Facilities for Strategic Missiles, Vol. 2. Briefings on Systems Concepts and Requirements, Fed. Doc. Number, NRC sets TT-82-2. Illustration 24. The Tunnel Boring Machine, TBM. Inside, the pre-dug exit goes into action and bores the rest of the way out from deep underground. In this representation, the missile transporter and launcher are in the background. Source: Design and Construction of Deep Underground Basing Facilities for Strategic Missiles, Volume 2. Briefings on Systems Concepts and Requirements, Fed. Doc. Number, NRC sets TT-82-2. Illustration 25. Here's a side view of the post-attack digout tunnel. Source: Design and Construction of Deep Underground Basing Facilities for Strategic Missiles, Volume 1. Evaluation of Technical Issues, Fed. Doc. Number, NRC sets TT-82-1. Illustration 26. Here's a detailed schematic from the Air Force for a combination tunnel boring machine and nuclear missile launcher that would be used to dig out of a deep underground missile base and fire a missile. The deep base would be at least a half mile underground. Source: Tunnel Boring Machine Technology for a Deeply Based Missile System, Vol. 1. Part 1. Application Feasibility, Fed. Tech. Doc. No. AFWLTR 79-120. August 1980. Illustration 27. The government identified these 16 spots as potential sites for deep underground basing facilities for strategic nuclear missiles. Source: Design and Construction of Deep Underground Basing Facilities for Strategic Missiles, Volume 2. Briefings on Systems Concepts and Requirements, Fed. Doc. Number, NRC sets TT-82-2. Illustration 28. Two tunnel boring machines, TBMs, sold by the Robbins Company. The top model was built for Larry Union Irrigation Project, the bottom one for Boston Outfall. The front ends of these TBMs chew away the rock. The structures that trail behind house the operators and carry away the muck. Photos used with permission from the Robbins Company. Illustration 29. This Java MK-27 model was used to build the Hallandsås rail tunnel in Sweden. Photo used with permission from the Robbins Company. Illustration 30. The Robbins Company manufactures huge shaft boring machines for excavating large vertical shafts. Photo used with permission from the Robbins Company. Illustration 31. This mobile miner, sold by the Robbins Company, cuts a large deschappered tunnel. Photo used with permission from the Robbins Company. Illustration 32. Depiction of a Robbins Company mobile miner in action. The sales literature promises high advance rates and high-speed tunneling. The large area under excavation in the diagram is amazing. Each of the grids in the lower figure is 1,000 featuring on a side. Photo used with permission from the Robbins Company. Illustration 33. The mobile miner can cut this kind of access tunnel, which is over 15 feet wide. Photo used with permission from the Robbins Company. Illustration 34. A flame jet tunneler, as pictured by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Office of High-Speed Ground Transportation, from Feasibility of Flame Jet Tunneling, Volume II Systems Analysis and Experimental Investigations, May 1968, Fed. Doc. Number, PB 178199. Illustration 35. A flame jet tunneler, as pictured in cross-section by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Office of High-Speed Ground Transportation, from Feasibility of Flame Jet Tunneling, Volume 2, Systems Analysis and Experimental Investigations, May 1968, Fed, Doc, Number, PB 178199, Illustration 36, the air conditioned cab, capacity 10 men, in a flame jet tunneler, as pictured in cross-section by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Office of High-Speed Ground Transportation. The heat generated by the cutting head of this machine would be intense, judging by the huge ice storage bin, air conditioning, and airlock. From Feasibility of Flame Jet Tunneling, Volume 2, Systems Analysis and Experimental Investigations, May 1968, Fed, Doc, Number, PB 178199, Illustration 37, Protective Suiting for the Operators of the Flame Jet Tunnelers. The umbilical cords hook up to an elaborate cooling apparatus not shown here. From Feasibility of Flame Jet Tunneling, Volume 2, Systems Analysis and Experimental Investigations, May 1968, Fed, Doc, Number, PB 178199, Illustration 38, a conceptual drawing of a hard arc tunneling machine that uses pulsed electron beams to cut the arc. To fit this illustration on one page, the drawing was cut between Unit 5 and Unit 6. In the original, the whole machine forms one linked set of cars. From Accelerator Division Annual Reports, 1 July 1972 to 1931 December 1974, Fed, Doc, Number, LBL 3835, UC-28 Particle Accelerators, TID-4500R62, Illustration 39, a nuclear-powered tunneling machine patented by the United States of America, represented by the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission. This tunneler is designed to convert the rock that it excavates into a molten liquid, which fills cracks in the rock, bonds to the walls of the tunnel, and leaves behind a smooth, vitreous lining. The United States Patent Office issued the patent on the 26th of September 1972. Illustration 40, another nuclear-powered tunneling machine patented by the United States of America, this time represented by the U.S. Energy Research and Development Administration. The United States Patent Office issued the patent papers on the 6th of May 1975. Illustration 41, another page of drawings from the 6th of May 1975 patent for a nuclear-powered tunneling machine, granted to Los Alamos, New Mexico inventors working for the U.S. Energy Research and Development Administration. This machine would leave behind neat, glass-lined tunnels. Illustration 42, two different types of nuclear subterranean tunnel boring machines. These machines are designed to melt their way through the rock and soil, leaving behind neat, glass-lined tunnels. Source, Large Submarine Rock Melting Tunnel Excavation Systems, a preliminary study, Fed, Doc, Number, LA 5210 MS. Illustration 43, a lunar tunneler, as proposed in a project funded by a grant from NASA USRA, reprinted with permission from Proposal for a Lunar Tumid Boring Machine, by Allen, Cooper, Davila, Mahendra and Zagaras, report presented to Prof. Stan Lowy, Department of Aerospace Engineering, Texas A&M University, the 5th of May 1988. Illustration 44, the dumping process from the lunar tunneler proposal. In the bottom drawing, excavated lunar soil is sprayed into a large pile by a movable car, reprinted with permission from Proposal for a Lunar Tunnel Boring Machine by Allen, Cooper, Davila, Mahendra and Zagaras, report presented to Prof. Stan Lowy, Department of Aerospace Engineering, Texas A&M University, the 5th of May 1988. Illustration 45, the Environmental Protection Agency tracks the migration of atomic particles from the Nevada test site into the animals and humans of the surrounding environment. This map, modified from an EPA map, shows the location of about 40 families who are brought into the EPA twice a year for whole body analysis. Part of their examination takes place in the reclining chair pictured in the photograph. The machinery which hangs from the ceiling performs a whole body scan of the subject. Source, U.S. Congress, Office of Technology Assessment, the Containment of Underground Nuclear Explosions, OTISC 414, Washington, D.C., U.S. Government Printing Office, October 1989, Illustration 46. Samples of raw milk are collected each month from about 25 farms surrounding the Nevada test site. Source, U.S. Congress, Office of Technology Assessment, The Containment of Underground Nuclear Explosions, OTISC 414, Washington, D.C., U.S. Government Printing Office, October 1989, Illustration 47. Is the government more concerned about nuclear pollution of the environment than it lets on? Every year it collects milk samples for analysis from its standby milk surveillance network, which is made up of all of the major milk sheds west of the Mississippi River. Source, U.S. Congress, Office of Technology Assessment, The Containment of Underground Nuclear Explosions, OTISC 414, Washington, D.C., U.S. Government Printing Office, October 1989. Background and objects of the invention. The primary object of this invention is to provide a system for identifying an object, animal or person consisting essentially of two units, one being a passive integrated transponder, PIT, which is carried by or embedded in the thing or animal to be identified and which responds to interrogation with an identifying code, and the other unit being an interrogatory to separate from the PIT. Heretofore, in identification device systems, there is illustration 48. This U.S. patent describes the inner electronic workings of an injectable transponder. Note the detail from this patent, which says the primary object of this invention is to provide a system for identifying an object, animal or person. More than one company in the U.S. now sells injectable electronic IDs. They are commonly used to identify livestock or companion animals. Fact sheet: United States Air Force Material Command Office of Public Affairs, Phillips Laboratory 3550 Aberdeen Ave SE, Kirtland AFB, NM87117, 5776, 505, 846, 1911, the laser medical pack, being developed in house by the USAF's Phillips Laboratory, is a very compact device that provides the field paramedic or physician a unique, portable, and battery-operated laser capability. The laser is able to cut like a scalpel, as well as coagulate bleeding and close wound scans for advanced trauma life support on the battlefield. It can be used by special operations personnel, pararescue jumpers, squadron medical elements, and flight surgeons. Civilian uses for the pack are in stabilizing highway accident victims before they are transported to a hospital. Requires an electrical power hookup, fits inside a belt pack. Laser energy is delivered to the instrument by a fiber optic cable, the fiber providing very intense power density at the tip of the instrument. The output wavelength, which ranges from visible red to the mid-infrared, can be designed to provide different tissue interactions power the electronics. It features a unique phase change heatsink that allows 20 minutes of continuous operation. Under normal usage, the heat capacity should allow unlimited thermal capacity. The laser is protected against over temperature by a thermal switch. A battery recharger port is also provided, as is a key lock for safety and security reasons. The fiber optic is pigtailed into the laser array and pipes the laser light to the variable focus lens. The light at the tip of the fiber is very intense. 1 kilowatt per square centimeter. Laser medical pack. The laser medical pack has military applica. The laser component is now commercially available, the commercial variety. However, the Phillips laboratory system consists of a completely self-contained laser package that the pack is powered by two 2-volt batteries to operate the laser and one 9-volt battery to more. Illustration 49. This medical laser is portable enough to be worn on a belt pack around the waist, and can be used to either make cuts or close wounds. According to the Air Force, it can be used by special operations personnel. Reprinted with permission from Phillips Laboratory, Office of Public Affairs, Kirtland Air Force Base, NM. Illustration 50. Communication from a deep underground base could transmit through conventional ground lines, through a satellite or microwave dish, or as this illustration shows, in a way that would be invisible to a surface observer. Extremely low frequency, ELF, communications transmit through the Earth itself, using a widely spread underground antenna system. Source, decision analysis methodology applied to deep base communications. Subtask progress report for 1985 prepared for the headquarters, Ballistic Missile Office, USAF, documented NOSTART AFMIPR number, FY7653-7685-00305, USID 20848, and DE87000945, the mother of all underground tunnels and other flaky characters, and nothing more. In that way, the Pentagon could carry out its underground agenda and prying eyes would be deflected by the threat of public humiliation and ridicule. In any event, the evidence I have presented above is the closest I can come to documenting an actual, covert, underground tunnel system in the Western states. This system may or may not exist. The Department of Transportation tunnel plans. I have found less documentation for the Department of Transportation's planned tunnel system in the Northeast. I was able to find a few documents, however, including one lengthy report that spoke forthrightly about constructing what it referred to as a high-speed ground transportation, HSGT, system in the Northeast Corridor. Presumably the system would be for the use of commuters, although just who would use the tunnels was left somewhat ambiguous. Vague reference to vehicles that would use the system also left some doubt as to the mode of transportation that was to have been employed. In the following chapter on unconventional tunneling technologies, I present documentation on a flamejet tunneling system intended for constructing a deeply buried, high-speed rail tunnel system in the Northeast. These two sets of documents would appear to be describing plans for one and the same system, the more so since they were both published in the same year, 1968. As set forth in the document, the tunnel system could have ranged as deeply as 3,500 featuring underground. It was to have been at least 500 featuring underground when cutting beneath major rivers, with the exception of the Hudson, under which it was to cross at a depth of not less than 750 featuring. Diameters for tunnels in the system were not specified. 81 underground bases and tunnels, though a range of excavated diameters, not to be confused with finished diameters, which would be somewhat less due to the tunnel lining and support. All the way from 8 featuring to 40 featuring was discussed. Specifically, diameters of 8 featuring, 20 featuring, 30 featuring and 40 featuring were mentioned. An obvious question is, why would the DOT bother to construct an intercity tunnel system that would be less than 8 featuring in diameter? It hardly makes sense, except as an auxiliary or utility tunnel for a larger diameter companion tunnel. The larger diameters, of course, could conceivably accommodate some sort of rapid rail or magnetic levitation 16 train. Terminals were to range in size between 10,000 and 1 million square featuring in area, and to have multiple levels. They were slated to be located at least 300 featuring, and in some cases, 500 featuring or more underground. They were to have been as much as 2,000 featuring long. The terminals were to have been situated under or near Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Maryland, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, New York, New Haven, Connecticut, Hartford, Connecticut, and Boston, Massachusetts. The plans also called for at least one deep shaft between each city to connect with the system. The shafts were to be vertical, and quite large and deep, extending as far down as 3,500 featuring, if necessary, and having 17 a cross-section of between 50 and 500 square featuring. Plans versus real tunnels. Once again, the question arises, has this system been built? The planning study is certainly very interesting. In fact, it is just the sort of obscure document you would expect to find if, indeed, a secret tunnel system were being planned and or built by the US government, 80 to the mother of all underground tunnels. But the reader must be clear on the fact that plans are one thing, and actual tunnels quite another. Sometimes plans culminate in completed construction projects. At other times, plans are never concretely realized and are relegated instead to a dusty shelf in the government's documents collection. I simply do not know if the government, or some other organization, has secretly built a high-speed transportation tunnel system in the Northeastern Corridor of the United States. If you do, please send me the relevant documentation. 83 Underground Bases and Tunnels, Chapter 6 Tunneling Machines, The Conventional Types and the Science Fiction Black Models. As strange as some of the information that I've presented so far may seem, some of the tunneling machine plans discussed in this chapter are stranger still. The first thing to understand is that there are actual tunneling machines that crawl through the ground like giant mechanical earthworms with huge appetites. These tunneling machines are used on construction projects all over the world to build perfectly ordinary sewers, subways, utility lines, highways, railroads, aqueducts, hydroelectric projects, as well as jazzy, high-profile projects like the Channel. The tunnel underneath the English Channel that now makes it possible to travel on dry ground between England and France. As for other, more bizarre tunnel systems and tunnel boring machines that are rumored to exist, the best that I can do is to present for your consideration in this chapter new and fascinating information that most readers probably have never seen before. At the least, I think the evidence that is set out in the following pages is intriguing and suggestive. The discussion begins with the conventional machinery, which you may, nevertheless, find surprising. 84 tunneling machines. Conventional tunnel boring machines, TBMs. Conventional tunnel boring machines, or TBMs, as they are known in the trade, are huge, cylindrical, mechanical boring machines that tunnel through the rock and soil, chewing out circular tunnels that may range in diameter up to 35 feet or more. See illustrations 28 and 29. Conventional rock tunneling TBMs are powered by electrical motors and have a cutting head, equipped with various metal attachments made of superhead alloys that cut the rock as the head rotates. The head rotates and the cutting tools dig into the rock, ripping and gouging it away. The excavated rock muck is then passed back by a conveyor assembly to the rear of the machine, where it can be hauled away by truck or train. The tunneling machine braces itself against the walls of the tunnel section it has just bored by means of powerful hydraulic gripper pads. Other hydraulic jacks thrust the cutter head forward against the face of the tunnel. When the cutter head is extended as far forward as the thrust jacks permit, the gripper pads are attracted. The machine is advanced forward against the face of the tunnel. The side gripper pads are again extended to lock the body of the machine solidly in place in the tunnel, and the thrust jacks again apply pressure to the cutter head, as it once again begins to grind and tear away at the tunnel face, boring its way through the rock. In brief, that is how a conventional tunnel boring machine works. The entire assembly, including cutting head, motors, transformers, hydraulic systems, mucking system and conveyors, can be up to 100 feet long or more, as the illustrations show. The machine may be shielded to keep rock and debris from falling in on the crew or to prevent tunnel collapse until a protective tunnel lining can be put in place. Such are 85 underground bases and tunnels. Tunnel lining is commonly made of concrete or steel bracing. If the rock is stable enough, however, it may not be necessary to install a lining. Oftentimes rock bolts are used to stabilize the tunnel walls and roof. These are simply long steel rods, threaded on the end, that are screwed or driven into the rock, and which anchor small, flat, steel plates against the wall or roof of the tunnel. See illustration 14. In this way, the rock bolts lend structural support to weak rock and help prevent rock falls and the like. Over the last 35 years, many of these tunnel making machines have been produced. They have been used to construct utility conduits, highways, railroads, aqueducts, hydroelectric projects, subways, and more. There is an enormous amount of tunneling activity going on around the world, and most of it is perfectly straightforward, for legitimate purposes. A few of the companies that have manufactured TBMs are: A. The Robbins Company of Kent, Washington. B. Java Incorporated. C. The Lawrence Division of the Ingersoll Rand Company. D. The Hughes Tool Company. E. Dresser Industries. F. The Worth Corporation, a German company. And G. Atlas Tokopko. Many companies have built tunneling machines, but my research shows the Robbins Company to be far and away the leading manufacturer of tunnel boring equipment. And, in fact, the Robbins Company promotes itself in sales materials as the foremost tunneling firm in the world. Robbins has been in business since the 1950s and has made many of the conventional TBMs in use. In 1993, the Robbins Company merged with Atlas Copco Mechanical Rock Excavation. The new business is known as the Robbins Company, a company in the Atlas Copco Group. Promotional literature from the new Robbins Company 86 tunneling machines says, "The next TBM we build for you, whether Robbins or Java, will be the best you have ever bought. All of the TBMs in illustrations 28 and 29 were built by Robbins. That is not to say that other companies are not involved with tunneling projects, because they are. For projects requiring a huge shaft bored straight down into the earth, and some of the projects described in this book call for vertical shafts, the Robbins company manufactures the appropriate machinery. See illustration 30. In the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, Total Recall, about a futuristic, CIA-operated mining colony on Mars, tunneling and mining machines were depicted that somewhat resemble machines that are already in actual use right here on Earth. These machines are called three road headers and mobile miners. See illustrations 31-33 for a Robbins mobile miner and the kind of tunnels that it is capable of excavating. Robbins prides itself on the rapidity with which these types of machines operate. The brochure from which these illustrations are taken boasts, the high advance rates of tunnel boring machines are well documented. The mobile miner can provide continuous, rapid advance of headings, and can create ideal cross sections for the safe and rapid transportation of men and equipment underground. The flexibility and maneuverability of the mobile miner provide high-speed tunneling. Consider the size of the field in which the mobile miner is depicted as operating in illustration 32. Each of the square grids is 1,000 feet wide. The whole area is over a mile wide. Look at the beautiful downward spiraling tunnel in illustration 33. The width of the tunnel is about 15 feet. That's wide enough for two average size cars to pass one another. 87 underground bases and tunnels. This is what industry is capable of doing right now. And it is impressive. Drill and blast method. Before moving on to discuss non-conventional tunnel boring technologies, I want to mention one other conventional method of tunneling, the drill and blast method. It has been used for a couple of centuries or more, mostly in hard rock mining, and its very name describes the method well. Holes are drilled in the tunnel face, explosives are placed in the holes, the explosives are detonated, the rock disintegrates under the force of the explosion, and the disintegrated rock muck is removed by front-end loaders to trucks or other conveyors, such as narrow-gauge trains, which cart away the debris. This cycle is repeated over and over again to lengthen the tunnel until the job is completed. There is nothing magical about this process. Any miner will tell you that it simply entails a lot of difficult, dangerous work. No doubt much of the underground construction for the facilities mentioned in this report has been accomplished using the drill and blast method. While not glamorous, underground drilling and blasting is a time-proven, surefire way to excavate underground tunnels and chambers. It is a known technology and it works. All of the myriad mining companies in the United States and around the world use this technique every day to mine everything from coal to copper, iron, salt, uranium, tin, gold, silver and lead. In other words, there is a huge pool of workers in the United States alone who have experience in the mining industry and who have tunneled or excavated underground using drill and blast techniques. This author, for instance, 88 tunneling machines was once employed by Morton Salt and actually worked for a brief period on the powder crew in a salt mine 800 featuring underground, drilling and blasting out huge caverns in the rock salt. I can assure you that there is a ready supply of experienced labor that could easily be tapped for covert mining, tunneling and excavation projects, especially the kinds that pay good government wages. Non-conventional tunneling machines, like many students of ufology, and perhaps like some of the readers of this book, I have heard rumors in recent years of mythical TBMs that use lasers to bore their way through the rock. As the stories run, these wondrous machines slice through the subterranean depths like a hot knife through butter, leaving neat, glass-walled tunnels in their wake. Although I have never seen one of these machines, or the glass-walled tunnels they allegedly make, I do not dismiss these stories out of hand. As you are about to see, it is entirely conceivable that laser-powered tunnel-boring machines, or equally exotic machines, have been developed and have been put to work on secret tunneling projects. I don't positively know that to be the case, but after reading what follows, the serious student will have to admit that it is at least possible that a powerful new generation of non-conventional TBMs may have been developed and deployed out of the public eye. There must be 50 ways to dig a tunnel. For a 1974 report from Bechtel sets out a whole grocery list of technologies, techniques and apparatuses that could be used for underground tunneling or 89 underground bases and tunnels excavation. They are all presented as novel ground disintegration techniques in an exploratory, research or developmental stage, as you will shortly see. Though, at least some of these techniques may be a good deal more advanced than Bechtel was prepared to admit. This was probably as true in 1974, when Bechtel issued the report, as it is today. The techniques Bechtel listed were: high-pressure continuous water jet, low-pressure percussive water jet, mechanically assisted continuous water jet, high-frequency electrical drill, thermal mechanical fragmentation, conical bore, turbine drill, pellet drill, spark drill, electric arc drills, induction drilling, plasma microwaves, jet piercing, flame terror jet. Some of this stuff is, there's no getting around the fact that the plain English translation of some of these entries is ray gun. It does seem a bit far-fetched, but suppose there are actually machines that use these technologies tunneling away beneath our feet. No matter whether it's science fiction fantasy or high-tech reality, this information comes straight out of an official government document. Here is a case where truth may yet prove to be as strange as any fiction. 90 REAM explosive drill, ultrasonic drill, hydraulic rock hammer, subterranean water cannon, electrical disintegration, electron beam gun, forced flame laser, straight out of Buck Rogers. Tunneling machines. The already strange gets even stranger, lest you think the 1974 Bechtel report to be beyond the pale. Consider a 1971 article on tunneling technology that contained the following entries. A Yenit Research Institute has just completed studies of the use of hypervelocity fluid jets and pellet impact. Design of a high-velocity water cannon is underway and a prototype is planned for testing in 1972. AN United Aircraft Research Labs is studying use of a high-power pulsed laser mounted on a boring machine to weaken rock structures ahead of the cutter blades. If the study is successful, a prototype will be designed this 5 year and then built for field testing in 1972. Water cannon, laser. Both of these techniques were mentioned in the 1974 Bechtel report, and this report, from 3 years earlier, strongly suggests that the techniques were considered more than theoretically interesting. Plans for construction of working prototypes are specifically mentioned. Might these machines actually have been built? Certainly interest in these exotic mining and excavation methods continued, because an article in the 1982 edition of an industry handbook listed many of the same technologies again. Mechanical, water cannon, vibration, abrasion, cavitation, pellet impact, thermal, high velocity flame, flame jet cutting, electric arc, electron beam, plasma, freezing, laser, atomic fusion chemical, softeners, dissolvers. 91 underground bases and tunnels again. Most of these techniques are mentioned in the 1974 Bechtel report cited above. The techniques mentioned in the 1971 article discussed above also appear in this 1982 article. The author of the 1982 article singles out the water cannon and flame jets as showing particular promise for tunneling machines. The water cannon essentially grinds away the rock face by directing a high-pressure, pulsed, water jet against it. Calwald and Exotech, Inc. are two companies mentioned in connection with development of water jet-assisted tunneling. Flame jet tunneling uses very high-temperature jets of flame to cut through the rock. United Aircraft Laboratories, cited above in connection with a partially laser-powered tunneling machine, has done developmental work on flame jet tunneling. Flame jet tunneling in a 3-volume 1968 report. United Aircraft Research Laboratories presented a study of the feasibility of flame jet tunneling. The report seems to have been stimulated by the professed desire of the US Department of Transportation to find a more efficient means of tunneling so that it could construct a high-speed underground rail corridor in the northeastern part of the country. This appears to refer to the same deep underground tunnel system discussed earlier in this report, which was to have connected the northeastern urban corridor between Washington, D.C. and Boston, Massachusetts. To my knowledge, an underground project fitting that description has never been carried out. The flame jet tunneler, as described by United Aircraft Research Laboratories, travels on crawler treads. High-temperature jets of flame are directed against the Tunnel 92 tunneling machine's face, and as the cutting head rotates, the flame jets cut into the rock. Other attachments on the cutting head break off the rock and dump it onto a muck conveyor to be carried to the back of the machine. See illustrations 34 and 35. There the muck is transferred to the cars of a muck train to be carried to the rear of the tunnel and hoisted to the surface for disposal. Due to the combustion gases and high temperatures generated by the flames, the tunneling crew would ride behind the tunneler in a climate-controlled cab. See illustration 36. When they ventured outside into the tunnel environment, they would wear suits like those that astronauts wear to protect them from the heat and poisonous gases in the tunnel. See illustration 37. The actual size of the tunnel could be as much as 30 feet ring in diameter. Power would be drawn from a high voltage electrical supply. Flame jet tunneling would leave a smooth wall as the flame seared and broke the rock. Volume 1 of the report estimates the cost of flame jet tunneling for a 20 feet ring diameter tunnel at anywhere from 44% to 28% of the cost of the drill and blast method. The authors of the report state that flame jet tunneling is especially suited for very hard rock tunneling, where mechanical TBMs have a much 7 slower rate of progress. The second volume of the report runs to more than 350 highly detailed pages of cost and efficiency analysis, engineering studies, and various other plans for using flame jet tunnel machines to construct a tunnel system 81,000 featuring underground. The third volume discusses dated conventional tunneling techniques. As with so much else in this report, the flame jet tunneling documents are real, but have actual flame jet tunneling machines been built, and are there really flame 93 underground bases and tunnels? Jet tunneling crews in moon suits 1000 featuring underground, boring through the bedrock, making secret tunnels for who knows what reason? Pulsed electron tunnel excavator. This exotic piece of equipment turned up in a single 9 article. Like the other non-conventional tunneling machines, it is presented as an interesting but untried technology. The article speaks of a pulsed electron tunnel excavator that would in theory be capable of tunneling approximately 10 times faster than conventional drill blast methods. It would do this by wearing away the rock face with a very high voltage beam of electrons, something like an electronic sandblaster. Most of the resulting muck would be small particles of sand and dust that would flake off and be removed from the tunnel face by a slurry pipeline. Larger chunks of rock would be removed by a conveyor. See illustration 38. Has this machine really been built, or is it just another Buck Rogers scheme that never got past the conceptual design stage? I don't know, but if you do, contact me with the relevant details. Nuclear Subterranes. The nuclear subterrane rhymes with submarine. Was designed at Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico. A number of patents were filed by scientists at Los Alamos. A few federal technical documents were written, and then the whole thing just sort of faded away. Or did it? Nuclear subterranes work by melting their way through the rock and soil, actually vitrifying it as they go, and leaving a neat, solidly glass-lined tunnel behind them. 94 tunneling machines. The heat is supplied by a compact nuclear reactor that circulates liquid lithium from the reactor core to the tunnel face, where it melts the rock. In the process of melting the rock, the lithium loses some of its heat. It is then circulated back along the exterior of the tunneling machine to help cool the vitrified rock as the tunneling machine forces its way forward. The cooled lithium then circulates back to the reactor, where the whole cycle starts over. In this way, the nuclear subterrane slices through the rock like a nuclear-powered 2000 degree Fahrenheit earthworm, boring its way deep underground. The United States Atomic Energy Commission and the United States Energy Research and Development Administration took out patents in the 1970s for nuclear subterranes. The first patent, in 1972, see illustration 39, went to the US Atomic Energy Commission. The nuclear subterrane has an advantage over mechanical TBMs in that it produces no muck that must be disposed of by conveyors, trains, trucks, etc. This greatly simplifies tunneling. If nuclear subterranes actually exist, and I do not know if they do, their presence, and the tunnels they make, could be very hard to detect, for the simple reason that there would not be the telltale muck piles or tailings dumps that are associated with conventional tunneling activities. The 1972 patent makes this clear. It states, D. Debris may be disposed of as melted rock, both as a lining for the hole and as a dispersal in cracks produced in the surrounding rock italics mine. The rock, melting drill is of a shape and is propelled under sufficient pressure to produce and extend cracks in solid rock radially around the bore by means of hydrostatic pressure developed in the molten rock ahead of the advancing rock drill penetrator. All melt not 95 underground bases and tunnels used in glass lining the bore is forced into the cracks where it freezes and remains dart. Such a vitreous lining eliminates, in most cases, the expensive and cumbersome problem of debris elimination and at the same time achieves the advantage of a casing 10 type of borehole liner. There you have it, a tunneling machine that creates no muck and leaves a smooth, vitreous, glassy tunnel lining behind. Another patent 3 years later, see illustrations 40 and 41, was for a tunneling machine for producing large tunnels in soft rock or wet, clayey, unconsolidated or bouldery earth by simultaneously detaching the tunnel core by thermal melting a boundary kerf into the tunnel face and forming a supporting excavation wall liner by deflecting the molten materials against the excavation walls to provide, when solidified, a continuous wall supporting liner, and attaching the tunnel face circumscribed by the kerf with powered mechanical earth detachment means and in which the heat required for melting the kerf and liner material is provided 11 by a compact nuclear reactor. This 1975 patent further specifies that the machine is intended to excavate tunnels up to 12 meters in diameter or more. This means tunnels of 40 featuring or more in diameter. The kerf is the outside boundary of the tunnel wall that a boring machine gouges out as it bores through the ground or arc. So, in ordinary English, this machine will melt a circular boundary into the tunnel face. The melted rock will be forced to the outside of the tunnel by the tunnel machine, where it will form a hard, glassy tunnel lining 96 tunneling machines. See the appropriate detail in the patent itself, as shown in illustration 41. At the same time, mechanical tunnel boring equipment will grind up the rock and soil detached by the melted kerf and pass it to the rear of the machine for disposal by conveyor, slurry pipeline, etc. See illustrations. And yet a third patent was issued to the United States Energy Research and Development Administration just 21 days later. On the 27th of May 1975, for a machine remarkably similar to the machine patented on the 6th of May 1975. The abstract describes a tunneling machine for producing large tunnels in rock by progressive detachment of the tunnel core by thermal melting a boundary kerf into the tunnel face and simultaneously forming an initial tunnel wall support by deflecting the molten materials against the tunnel walls to provide a, when solidified, a continuous liner, and fragmenting the tunnel core circumscribed by the kerf by thermal stress fracturing and in which the heat required for such opera 12 shines is supplied by a compact nuclear reactor. This machine also would be capable of making a glass-lined tunnel of 40 featuring in diameter or more. Perhaps some of my readers have heard the same rumors that I have heard swirling in the UFO literature and on the UFO grapevine. Stories of deep, secret, glass wall tunnels excavated by laser-powered tunneling machines. I do not know if these stories are true. If they are, however, it may be that the glass wall tunnels are made by the nuclear submarines described in these patents. The careful reader will note that all of these patents were obtained by agencies of the United States government. Furthermore, all but one of the inventors are from Los Alamos, New Mexico. 97 underground bases and tunnels, of course. Los Alamos National Lab is itself the subject of considerable rumors about underground tunnels and chambers, little grays or eaves, and various other covered goings-on. A 1973 Los Alamos study entitled Systems and Cost Analysis for a Nuclear Subterranean Tunneling Machine, a preliminary study, concluded that nuclear subterranean tunneling machines, NSTMs, would be very cost-effective compared to conventional TBMs. It stated, tunneling costs for NSTMs are very close to those for TBMs, if operating conditions for TBMs are favorable. However, for variable formations and unfavorable conditions such as soft, wet, bouldery ground or very hard rock, the NSTMs are far more effective. Estimates of cost and percentage use of NSTMs to satisfy U.S. transportation tunnel demands indicate a potential cost savings of $850 million. 1969 through 1990, an estimated NSTM prototype demonstration program cost of $100 million over an 8-year period results in a favorable 13 benefit to cost ratio of 8.5 Turn to illustration 42, which is reproduced from a second 1973 Los Alamos study, this one entitled Large Subterranean Rock Melting Tunnel Excavation Systems, a preliminary study, and compare it to illustration 41, from the patent issued in 1975. Without belaboring the point, I would like to call attention to the almost exact duplication of shared elements in these two drawings. Was the 1973 feasibility study only idle speculation, and is the astonishingly similar patent 2 years later only a wild coincidence? As many a frustrated inventor will tell you, the U.S.